Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to our Through the Bible podcast. This is Josh Swanson, lead pastor at Christ Church in Sierra Madre. So today we are jumping into the Wild West of the biblical story. We're starting the book of Judges. And I don't know why, but as I was reading through this book, I was thinking about Boba Fett. I don't know if anybody watched the Boba Fett miniseries. And I've been kind of into the different Star Wars spinoffs, you know, that Disney has been putting out there. And I've been a little bit disappointed with, you know, most of them, though Obi-Wan is awesome. So you'll probably want to watch Obi-Wan. But I watched Boba Fett. It wasn't that great, but Boba Fett was sort of like the Wild West of the Star Wars universe. And, you know, Boba Fett takes over Jabba the Hutt's lair on Tatooine. And, you know, there's a lot of like vigilantes out there and anarchy and rebel groups and violence and all kinds of stuff. And you see this throughout the book of Judges. Now, let's just set Judges in its context, and then I want to give a little outline, and then I want to talk about the core theological themes in this book. So, where does Judges sit? So, Judges follows upon the heels of Joshua, and you remember in the book of Joshua, Israel finally enters into the land of promise. God said, I will make your name great to Abraham. I will make you into a great nation through you. All the families of the earth are going to be blessed. My healing, justice-bringing love is going to flood to the nations through this people, Israel, who I am building up to be my great nation. But part of this building process, part of growing up into the nation that God was forming Israel to be, is he gave them his law on Mount Sinai. He gave them his tabernacle where his presence would dwell among his people. So they would be a people that lived under God's unique law that was inhabited by God's powerful presence and that lived in God's land. And so in the book of Joshua, they go into this land finally after being set free from Egypt and wandering through the wilderness. They go into the land. But when they get into the land, it all goes south, you know, and the text makes clear that Israel never actually drove out all of the inhabitants in their land. They were threatened by the Philistines on the western coast, and then they were threatened by the Moabites to their east, and there were Canaanites right there in the heart of the country. And so they were always bothered then, once they get into the land, by these enemies who are constantly afflicting them, sometimes abusing and oppressing them. And that's what Judges is about. But Judges is also about a group of charismatic leaders that God raises up. And in fact, the word Judges, the word in Hebrew can be translated judges, and we might think, you know, of like, you know, the Supreme Court justice, you know, somebody who renders verdicts on cases and is a wise sage, you know, thoughtful leader who is able to decide and discern. That's not judges. The Hebrew word could also be translated as chieftain, or it's almost like a tribal, you know, warlord almost. And that's what the judges are. They're these charismatic tribal leaders who basically fight and do battle on behalf of Israel and lead Israel into battle against her enemies. And that's what the judges do. So the book of Judges can be divided into three main sections. Section one, chapters 1 and 2. And that essentially provides a bridge from Joshua to Judges. The text makes clear that the conquest was never complete. In fact, it says this in chapter 1, Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants. It says in chapter 1, verse 29, Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites. It says in verse 30, Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants, and the Canaanites lived among them. Verse 31, Asher did not drive out the inhabitants. Naphtali, verse 33, did not drive out the inhabitants. So they lived among the Canaanites. And verse 34, and so the Amorites pressed the people of Dan. So this is showing that when the tribes go in, they never actually possess the land. And so it's providing this bridge between Joshua to Judges. Section 2 is chapter 2, verse 6 through chapter 16, verse 31. And this section contains the most memorable stories in the book of Judges. It tells the history of 13 or 14 different judges who were these tribal leaders that, as the Canaanites afflicted Israel, sometimes they would put them into forced labor. God would raise up a deliverer who would rescue the children of Israel. And included among these are the memorable leaders, Deborah, you know, the mother of Israel. And then there was Gideon, who, you know, whittled an army of 20,000 down to 300 and routed their enemies by the power of God, because the weakness of God is stronger than the strength of men. And then, of course, the most memorable and well-known of them all, Samson, the guy with the long dreadlocks from which he derived his power. And among all of the different judges, Samson has kind of this supernatural, heroic, you know, almost like an Avenger-like quality. He's like a combo between Hulk and Thor, or at least that's how I imagine him, you know, and he just does business. A key thing to notice in these chapters is an ongoing cycle that's right at the heart of this middle section, chapters 2, 6 through 16, verse 31. And the cycle that's well known in the book of Judges, it's almost like a rhythm that keeps happening. And the rhythm goes like this, you know, beat one, you know, Israel sins and does what is evil in God's sight, you know, beat two, you know, they abandon the Lord and then they fall into idolatry and then they evoke the anger of God, you know, beat three, and then they're sold into slavery and they're oppressed. And then before they cry out to God in their distress, and God hears their cry, and he comes to rescue them. And listen how it's described in chapter 2, verse 11. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals, and they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were all around them. And they bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. And they abandoned the Lord, and they served the Baals and the Ashtaroth. And so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers who plundered them, and he sold them into the hand of their surrounding enemies so that they could no longer withstand their enemies. And whenever they marched out, the hand of the Lord was against them, just as the Lord had warned them and had sworn to them, and they were in terrible distress. But then what happened? They cry out, and then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of those who plundered them. And yet they did not listen to their judges, for they whored after other gods and bowed down to them. So this is basically the ongoing cycle in the book of Judges. It happens again and again, and where it's like, we heard that story before. You know, I don't know if you've ever known somebody who's an addict, and, you know, sometimes they say, you know, they come to you and they're like, I'm finally done. I'm ready to be over. I'm done with the, you know, just take me back and let me move back in. And they come back home and they're living at home. And then they turn back to the same old thing, and they get back into the same mess, and they're enslaved, and they lose money, maybe they're on the streets, and then they come back again, and they cry out for help, and you take them back again, and then it goes back in that same cycle again and again. And of course, kind of, that's an extreme example, I think a lot of us have examples in our own life of stuff we wanted help from. We cried out to help, or we promised we weren't going to do it again. And, you know, they took you back. They believed your word and they welcomed you in. And then you went back and you did it all over again. I was thinking of actually entitling the book of Judges. It's kind of like giving it like the theme name. Remember the song from the 90s from Britney Spears, Oops, I Did It Again? I think the song is about her falling back in love with another like destructive lover. And that's kind of what Israel keeps, they keep falling back again and again with destructive idols and destructive practices. And yet in spite of that, God keeps raising up these charismatic leaders and delivering them. Now, a little word about these charismatic leaders. There is a downward spiral that happens with the different leaders. So it begins fairly well with Deborah, who is arguably the most compelling, the strongest, the most idyllic leader. She is not just a warlord. She is also a wise sage judge who the people will go to and have her render decisions. And she is a prophetess, and so she brings God's word. She's a songwriter, and so she leads Israel in fidelity to Yahweh. But this is kind of unique. You know, when you get to Gideon, Gideon starts off well, but as the story goes on, it starts to fall apart. And at the end of the story, Gideon creates this strange ephod that the text says that the children of Israel hoard after. And so it created some sort of idolatrous relationship. And then one of Gideon's sons winds up, you know, conspiring against his brother. He murders, you know, 70 of his brothers and then takes power. And there's this crazy political power struggle. And then, of course, after Gideon, there's a few other different judges like Tola and Jair, and there's Jephthah. But then most memorable of all of them is Samson, you know, and he is raised up. But Samson has almost no good qualities about him. He's strong, you know, but that's about it. You know, Samson is, He seems to almost exemplify the breakdown of charismatic leadership. You know, I was thinking actually in reading about Samson, it was making me think about kind of like the charismatic leaders in a lot of evangelical churches right now. And there's been a lot of well-known leaders in Hillsong or at Mars Hill Church or, you know, at Willow Creek, and charismatic leaders who wound up falling into sin because they lack the depth of character. And charisma and gifting is not the same thing as character. And in the judges, you have leaders that have charisma, they have strength, they have a spirit-endowed power that enables them to lead and to defeat enemies and to be successful. But the success is not always spiritual success. And that's true of Samson. He's got charisma, he's got power, but he's got almost no character. And he seems more drawn to the sexual arena than he does to national struggle. He's more motivated by his own personal vengeance than a desire to save the nation. And he exercises supernatural power, but he seems just to sow destruction all around until at the very end of his life. And he creates hostility within his own fellow Israelites. And finally, when he defeats his own enemies at the very end, he does so taking his own life. And what we're seeing is a breakdown in this idea of charismatic leadership, which actually takes us into the third and final section, which is among the most dark and disturbing and R-rated chapters in the entire Bible. And it's followed by two stories. One is this bizarre story. This is section 3, by the way, which is chapter 17 through the end of the book. And there's one story told of a guy named Micah who creates this idol. And then he hires a young Levite who is a priest in his own private sanctuary. It's just this very, very strange story. And then there's this grisly tale of a concubine who is gang raped by the Benjamites, and then her body is chopped up into 12 pieces and sent out to the different tribes within Israel in order to anger them and stir them up into battle and a civil war against their brothers, the Benjamites. And so the book of Judges ends in this bloody, grisly civil war that was followed upon the heels of this grisly story of this poor concubine who was just taken advantage of and murdered. And it's just ugly, and it's dark, and it's disturbing. And it's worth asking, what is this book intending us to learn? You know, you have the succession of these tribal violent warlords who get worse and worse with each successive generation, as it seems like, you know, we begin with Deborah, the mother of Israel, who had character to accompany her charisma. And then it goes all the way down to Samson, who ultimately is like the embodiment of what's wrong with this type of leadership model without character. And then it ends up moving from there into Israel just falling apart at the seams. You know, the book of Judges could almost be captured perfectly in the famous line from Yeats, when he said, "Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed." And that's what you see in the book of Judges. It's basically things going from bad to worse. And we need to ask, what is going on here, and what are we supposed to learn here? And I think that the book of Judges is intended to lead us to the conclusion that comes at the final line in the book. You know, it's interesting. So Judges opens up with a king in Canaan whose thumbs and toes are chopped off, which are essentially there to prevent him from fighting in war. And it ends with more dismemberment, but a much larger and more grisly and dark scale. And then the very final line of the book. And I almost think, by the way, if you're thinking of reading the book of Judges a chapter a day to get a little edifying reading in the morning, some chapters will get you there. Story about Gideon, we'll talk about that next time, has got some rich stuff about how God's power is manifest in human weakness, and it prefigures the power of God being put on display in the weak and the vulnerable suffering and the death of Jesus. Of course, there's the story of Deborah again, so much there, and Samson, there's some interesting insight there. But to read this book a chapter a day, you know, and to find some edifying things, you know, I mean, it's a little tricky, you know. This isn't like, I thought, you know, it'd be kind of interesting to have a calendar of the book of Judges, you know, each one a little piece of artwork displaying a new way in which somebody was violently killed. You know, you could say, you know, in January, you know, it's Ehud going into the chambers where the king Eglon was with, you know, this left-handed warrior who pulls out a sword and cuts open the belly of Eglon the king, and all of his guts spill out, you know, or Jael, who takes a tent peg and drives it through the skull of Sisera. Or we could have another image of the lady who drops a millstone and crushes the head of another, her assailant. And, you know, there's all kinds of these dark, grisly, you know, it just doesn't make for all this great reading. And so you go through this, and I almost think of this like Cormac McCarthy story, like No Country for Old Men. Or I don't know if anybody's ever read any Flannery O'Connor, one of my favorite authors, but she traffics in the genre of Southern Gothic. You know, it's dark and it's kind of violent and it's disturbing. And you find yourself asking, what's the point of these stories? You know, where is this taking us? And that's the kind of literature that Judges is. And it's drawing together these historical stories from the memory of Israel and putting them together. And it's driving to a conclusion. And in the beginning, you know, it opens again with this strange story of a dismembered king, and that it ends in this very dark, grisly, disturbing way. And then here's the concluding line of the whole thing. It's chapter 21, verse 25. And in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And I think it's revealing the need, especially in an ancient culture that was full of violence, the need for a good, humane king. The need for a humanizing kind of leader. It's revealing the danger of anarchy, of self-rule, of people doing what's right in their own eyes. And it's demonstrating just how dark and how awful things can get when people live this kind of nihilistic, meaningless existence where we just do whatever we want. There's no higher authority. There's no grand meta-narrative that we can be a part of. There is no divine rule that we submit our lives to. And there's no good king who administers this rule in the world. I think it's intending to reveal something like that to us. And of course, you know, we who find ourselves confronted on the news all the time with another mass shooting, with more violent images of a war in Ukraine or of bloodshed, you know, in somewhere in the Sudan or in Iran or Iraq, or, you know, and there's bloodshed all around us. And I think what this story is intended to do, like what these stories ultimately are intending to do, is expose the problematic nature of humanity that seeks to live apart from the humane, loving rule of God. You know, the stories in the book of Judges that climax in this bloody civil war of Israelites killing their fellow Israelites is a far cry from the rule of God, the Mosaic law, that at the very heart of the five books is Leviticus. And at the heart of Leviticus is that command, love your neighbor as yourself. And so this is the anti-loving neighbor book. This is showing what happens when we do violence to neighbors, what happens when we throw off the rule of God. And it's paving the way for what's to come next, which is 1 and 2 Samuel, which is the story of God's gift of a king for his people. Now, ultimately, it is to prepare the way for God's people to not have David meet this need for a king, but have a better and truer David. When we get to 1 and 2 Samuel, we realize that that David is not going to ultimately meet that need, that a better and truer king, a better son of David is needed. And so I think this is ultimately paving the road for the human creatures to long for the true and better king, namely Jesus, who would come as the Prince of Peace, as the King of Righteousness, as the one who would bring peace to flood God's world, who would rule in justice and righteousness and truth. And, you know, frankly, we still need that in our world today. We still long for a king, and the world needs to continually come to terms with the reality that human leaders on their own, apart from God's rule, charismatic leaders, even charismatic pastors that put themselves at the center of reality, that don't orient their lives around God and his rule and his good law, and submitting themselves ultimately will not lead the world to the place it needs to go. We need true leaders that administer God's rule that is loving and humane in this world. And that's the primal message of the book of Judges. Now, again, next time we're going to dive into some of the, kind of texture of this book and look at a couple really cool stories. But that's Judges in a nutshell.
Praise Father, Son.